Hello and welcome to another episode of the Investors Chronicle Extraction podcast, in which we speak to executives of companies operating in the natural resources sector. I'm Alex Newman, a writer at the Investors Chronicle, and today I'm joined by Jim Johnson, Chief Executive of FTSE 250 Constituent Hunting, the London-listed oil services company with perhaps the largest proportional exposure to the once-again booming upstream US shale industry. So, higher prices have been good for unconventional producers, and that's been good news too for Hunting. Since last September, when Mr. Johnson took the reins at the company, the oil price has increased more than 50%, and Hunting's shares have doubled. Jim, thank you very much for coming to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
I suppose that's kind of the start to your role you could have only dreamed about, or have you learned to ignore the spikes in the industry? Is such a rise in such a short time a sign for concern instinctively for an oil services CEO?
Well, after 30 years, I've lived through my share of the ups and downs in the business, so I try not to be too focused on the day-to-day movements. The positive thing for Hunting and for our industry is that long-term energy has a really bright future, especially when it comes to oil and gas, and our company is well-placed to benefit from that.
Excellent. So, let's just take a step back. I mean, can I just get you to introduce briefly Hunting's products, its clients, and where your geographical focuses
sure.
are specifically?
Well, Hunting is very fortunate. We have a very broad portfolio of products. We are benefiting not only from the onshore shale plays, but we also have great exposure to the offshore markets. Our largest market right now is in North America, and the primary driver of our activity there is our Titan division, which specializes in perforating guns and explosives and perforating systems and instrumentation for the fracking segment of the industry. That business is very, very strong right now, you know, driven by what you're reading in the Permian Basin and the activity there. The other segments of our business, we're very focused in the OCTG business, which is the tubing and casing used in oil and gas wells. We have that business internationally with offices in Canada. We have business in manufacturing in Southeast Asia, offices in the Middle East, and also we sell premium connections in the U.S. So we touch the OCTG business in a number of places globally, and that's really managed by the fact that the OCTG, being related to steel, is a very highly political business. So with things like duties going into effect in the U.S. or other markets, you have to have a broad base and a broad supply base in order to play there, which we do. Two other key segments for us are Advanced Manufacturing Group. We're one of the few companies in the world that make advanced printed circuit boards for downhole tools. And the advantage of our processes is that it allows these tools to perform under a very harsh and extreme conditions. We call it shake and bake because of the high temperatures and all of the shock that goes through these tools. So we manufacture those, and then we actually make the tools for people like the big service players, the Halliburtons, the Bakers of the world. And then lastly, we're in the well intervention business, which is also global. So the good thing is we touch a lot of places. Fortunately, right now, the shale plays are very strong for us, but we also have a portfolio that benefits when the deep water plays and the offshore comes back.
You touched on a couple of your services clients there. Right. I mean, can we count as well, the big names, the sort of super majors, the big unconventional players in the US as your clients as well?
We literally have 1,000 clients right out there. And we touch so many different parts of the business that we sell to the people like the Chevrons and the Exxons and the Anadarkos, the Apaches, as well as the Halliburtons and the Schlumbergers and the Bakers. So it's service companies, it's oil companies, it's national oil companies. Basically, anybody involved in putting a hole in the ground can be a client of ours.
Okay. We spoke around 3 months ago and your full-year result. You told me that we've had Shale 1.0, which was maximizing the science. Mm-hmm. They're now figuring out how to do it at a continually lower price. One, does that remain the case? And two, what did it take for Shale 2.0 to come about? Was it the industry saying to itself, we need to start making money at some point?
I think it was a giant science project for a number of years. When you look back at the whole shale play, if you go back 15 years ago, nobody thought any of this was possible. It really wasn't until George Mitchell came up with the Barnett play up around Dallas that the world woke up to the fact that there's this massive resource there that can be cracked to deliver hydrocarbons. So for a while, even though they started doing it, they really never optimized it. The downturn accelerated that. It accelerated the people. It accelerated the need to be more prudent in the spending of money, and it evolved into a, once the science was done, turning this into a manufacturing operation. And I think that's the key with Shell 2.0 today. It's logistics. It's almost like needing an Amazon type approach in order to get these wells drilled and online.
So one of the big drivers for you is going to be the number of rigs that are active. How much is part of that rationalization about doing more with fewer wells for your clients? Or is it a case of drilling more wells but making each of them more efficient and lower cost, thereby providing you a hunting with greater upside?
I think that today we basically have, example in the U.S., we have 1,050 rigs running in the U.S. Reading from reports I've heard from oil company people, that rig count today is doing the same as what 1,350 rigs were doing 3 years ago.
Right.
So the rigs are more efficient. There's new generations of equipment out there that's quicker, faster, better in all segments. So in the drilling segment, on the completion segment. And so right now, you know, drilling days have maybe went from 22 days now down to 15. So they're getting a lot more value per dollar spent. And they're also increasing the intensity of these wells. So the lateral lengths are becoming much, much longer than what they were just 3 or 4 years ago. For us, that's a big plus because that's more perforating guns, more explosives, more tools, more switches. And that's where that intensity has really benefited hunting.
Mm. Working capital is big issue for a business like you or yours, or not necessarily an issue, but a big consideration. Have you seen in the last year, as oil prices have gone up and presumably the economics for your clients have improved, that the sort of standard metrics of working capital, sort of debtor days, turnovers, is starting to improve?
For us, as a company, our working capital number has increased just for the sheer fact that our business has increased.
Right.
So we're going to have more inventory. We're going to have more receivables out there. And so it's been a positive. We just need to continue to manage that well. Our clients are still, and it's funny because some of our clients who are world leaders and have more money than anybody are the worst payers that we have in the business. But you work through those situations, you manage it appropriately, and you want to continue to have a relationship with them. So again, yeah, working capital has grown, but so have the results to go along with that return.
So just to return to a point you made at the top of the podcast, when you said you've sort of learned to live with the spikes in the industry. Nonetheless, for investors, that's a very big consideration with oil and gas companies, but also, and perhaps even more so with oil and gas services companies, which are in some ways a leveraged proposition on oil and gas industry. I mean, in the last week, you know, understandably, we've had some stories from OPEC talking about how while US Shell is going to dominate in the next few years, they are perhaps ready to turn the taps back on, take baby steps to unwinding some of the cuts they've had in place for the last year and a half. If West Texas falls to $60 a barrel, can you still expect double digit growth? Is there still growth for core client or your 70% of your client base, as you were saying?
I think it's $60 a barrel. That's a pretty good sweet spot for our clients. I don't think they're not rolling in money, but they're making good returns. And one of the things people have to keep in mind is even at today, even though we had to ramp up into the $70 level, most of our clients, especially those operating in the Permian, were not getting that $70 a barrel. So they had a $10 a barrel, for example, constraint because of logistics. There's, if you've read in some of these Shell plays, especially the Permian, pipeline capacity is full. They can't get it out. They're having to use rail or trucks. And so that's put a discount to that price. And on top of that, many of the clients also were hedged in the $50 somewhat barrel range because of the uncertainty where was the price going to go. So I think very few of them had benefited today with that price. So I'm fairly comfortable that even in a $60 barrel range, that there'll continue to be growth in the industry and we'll be doing very well.
Is that the same for deep water and offshore projects?
The deep water, the higher the better, obviously, because the size of the project costs are just so expensive. And the planning, the thing with that is the planning takes a long time. They call it the short cycle plays on shale. You could basically be starting to drill a well in 30 days. If you're going to drill a deep water well in the Gulf of Mexico or off of Angola, you need many, many, many months in order to plan that and work with the government and get all the approvals for that. The costs on deep water are continuing to come down as well. well. We recently secured some business in Guyana, and one of the operators down there that this is working with is with the Exxon and the Hess drilling project for Liza, which is down there. And the Hess management had a presentation and talked about that project and how it was more economical to drill those Guyana wells than what it was in the Permian Basin, in the Delaware segment of that. Because literally, for what they could produce with eight wells, it would take them 1,400 wells to generate in the Permian Basin. So, yes, the costs are much, much higher in there, but offshore is still roughly a third of the world's production, and it's not going away, and I don't see major oil companies closing up shop and firing all their deep water staff. So I think, you know, again, it's stability is a key word. Gyrations are what makes it tough. And right now, with a stable oil price, even in the $60 range, I think you're going to see the offshore segment rebound.
Right. So, I mean, even if they don't, shutter their divisions, it's still highly selective, isn't it? I mean, to get to a final investment decision, they're looking for very, very low break evens. They may have large portfolios of projects they could execute, but, you know, they're picking only a handful. How does that affect your offshore division?
Well, I mean, for us, the more offshore, the better. Sure. So it's a function of rig count.
And but right, how are you doing now, at the moment?
Yeah, right now, we're seeing it recover somewhat. It's still a far, far cry from where it was in 2014. But with talking with clients, at least there's a lot more discussion on things happening. If you look at people in the Gulf of Mexico, since that's the market that I'm closest with, you've seen last week Shell had a new big find in the Gulf of Mexico. And as you mentioned, they're looking at how they can bring these on at lower cost, which means a lot of these can be tiebacks into existing infrastructure without having to go drill or set in place a completely new platform. And that's what this new find that Shell has, which will tie in, I believe it's to Appomattox. But I think those are what the clients are looking for first on satellites and things like that, whether it's the North Sea, Southeast Asia, Gulf of Mexico. And with that, that will still be a lot of spending. There's a lot of potential to do those type of things. But we're seeing more discussions on the positive side in places like Brazil and some others. Gulf of Mexico segment that Mexico controls, we've actually had an order there. So that now has some interest in the world with players looking at it. So we're still bullish on offshore. This might not be the year you see a turn, but every day that goes on, it's getting closer.
Analysts often talk about cost inflation when they look at offshore. Is that the metric to measure it by, or is it just sheer volume that you'd prefer to get a lot more projects out there rather than looking to get an extra 5% on
that. I'd like both. But right now, it's the volume that we need. It wasn't for the products that Hunting offers, it wasn't so much a pricing issue. It was just a lack of work. It just wasn't there at any price. And we just need the industry to get more buoyant and put more rigs to work.
Excellent. Just turning penultimately to your financials, you were a dividend payer previously. You obviously, given your debt position in the last few years, you had to cut that. Things have obviously turned. I mean, I've seen some commentary suggesting that you should be moving into, quite a healthy net cash position before not too long. Do you return to the dividend list soon enough, given that seems to be the business model that investors ask of all services companies?
Yes, I have made it very clear through all my discussions with our investors and the investment community that I want to get our dividend reinstated as soon as possible. And fortunately, we're taking the right steps to get there. I'm not promising anything today, but no, that would be my goal to move forward with that. To me, it's a sign of a healthy company when you can return something back to the shareholders, and that's the one way that I want to start doing that.
Just finally as well, I mean, we were talking before this about your career in the oil and gas industry and at Hunting, and at the top of the podcast you did talk about, you know, the strength of your core market at the moment and the strength of the oil and gas business in the years to come. You know, if you're going to look 20 years ahead, and for investors, I suppose this is an important consideration because in some ways holding companies for the long term, it brings its benefits. Are you confident about where the oil and gas industry looks? It looks like it's heading in 15, 20 years. Does that keep you up at night, or is it, you know, is the industry only really focused on the next decade?
No, I think the industry is focused long term. I have no concerns about the health of this industry over the next 15 to 20 years. The world wants a growing middle class. There's billions of people all over the world that want air conditioning, cars. They want the same things that the rest of the world has. And it takes energy to do that, or it takes plastics in order to make that happen. I think that the world will continue to move greener. You're going to, the fact that we're going to have more electric cars and things like that is not going to go away. It shouldn't go away. We're going to have more windmills. We're going to have more solar. But the oil and gas segment, when you look at the sheer volume and demand that the world needs on this, just the treadmill that it runs on to keep things steady is an amazing machine that needs tons and tons of capital. So I'm very confident that this business is a great long-term place for any young person to be into and for any investor to be into.
Excellent. We'll leave it there. Jim, okay. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
To listen to more audio from the IC, go to our website, search for us on Acast, iTunes, or wherever you normally get your podcasts.